It's like going over to Egypt and going, hey, let's blow up the pyramids. You know, thousands of years of his historical things right there. That's what basically took place.
What happened? In Western Australia.
Yeah. So, you know, there's things that just can't be replaced. You know, that history, that all those caves and that were destroyed, and the artworks that are thousands of years old. That tell stories of that land and that nation, you know.
Welcome to Justice Matters, the podcast inspiring a world where everyone belongs. I'm your host, Tim Buxton.
G'day guys, it's Tim here, and before we get into today's episode, I've got an important announcement to share with you. Now, don't fast forward, it'll only be just a few seconds of your time. Guys, we are launching here at You Belong, the charity I started, our first ever and our inaugural Bike to Belong virtual challenge. We are encouraging people during World Refugee Week, which is June 13th to June 20th, to bike 80 kilometres during those 8 days for the 80 million displaced people in our world. Today, more than ever, more people than ever since World War II have been displaced because of persecution, war, famine, drought, natural disasters, and this COVID pandemic has had a catastrophic impact on those that are already facing some of the greatest hardships in their life. Friends, we can raise awareness and we can raise support through this campaign. Jump to biketobelong.com and you can learn more about how you can participate, how you can sponsor somebody that's already riding. There's so many ways you can get involved. You don't have to bike the full 80 Ks. If you've got a young family of kids, you can all choose together to bike 8 Ks. If you're a gun cyclist, why not bike 800 kilometers? You can customize it to how it suits you. You can even jump on a motorbike. You can jump on a stationary bike. You can jump on a mountain bike. We don't care how you bike, but join us. Be part of this global event. We've got people in New York, in Finland, here in Australia, biking to raise awareness and support for refugees, not only here in Australia, but in Iraq and Uganda as well. We're partnering up with our good friends at Tutapona to provide frontline mental health care to refugees there in Iraq and Uganda. Thanks so much, guys, for letting me steal some time at the top of this episode. Jump to biketobelong.com and we'll see you on the bikes in World Refugee Week. Thanks, guys. G'day, everyone. Today on the podcast, I sit down with Mark Watego. He's the Managing Director and Founder of Meeting Place Consultancy. They provide mental health care and first aid training throughout Australia. And in particular, one of the achievements that I know Mark is proud of is being able to train up new Indigenous facilitators to provide much needed Aboriginal first aid training and mental health care throughout a lot of Australia's remote communities that are desperately in need and under-resourced. As I sat down, I felt like a real student sitting at the feet of Mark, just learning a bit about the history and the challenges facing our Indigenous community here in Australia. As you come, I guess, in this podcast and join us at this meeting place that we have, I know as you learn and are moved and hear his heart, what a humble man. I walked away from end of you thinking how humble he is and how gracious he was to me as I became much more aware in listening to him of the challenges that face us as a nation. Hope you learn a lot, and I hope you go away with a resolve to learn more and to do what you can to bring justice, especially into the areas of that our Indigenous community are facing here in Australia. Thanks so much for being a part of this podcast. Now, I do need to let you know, unfortunately, the interview gets cut short at the end. I had a problem with one of the recordings on the audio file, and so though you would have received a little bit more, we've had to cut the episode a little short today, but I know you'll appreciate every minute that you listen to. And it's really a privilege and an honour for me to share this episode with Mark Watego, you today. Mark, thanks so much for joining me on the Justice Matters podcast.
No worries, Tim. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's great to have you in the studio. Now, I haven't done this on previous episodes, but I think it's high time we did and acknowledge that here in this studio, we are on Yugambeh land.
Yep, Yugambeh country, of the Kumbumeri people, the Gold Coast.
And formerly known as the Gold Coast here in Australia. And it's a beautiful thing, actually, to see more and more, you know, ceremonies that begin events or whether it be just any kind of production where they acknowledge the lands on which the work is being done, where we live, work, play, and it's just a beautiful, beautiful thing.
Yeah, look, Tim, and this is the thing, you know, for those of your listeners who are not sure about acknowledgements and welcomes and why they're performed. And look, I worked in Burley Heads here at one stage over at Flay's Fauna Centre, just not far from here.
Yes.
And I work with Uncle Bernie Williams, who is a relative and a former Kumbumeri person.
Yeah.
And he taught us about the Welcome to Country, and that the process was that whenever visiting tribes came to the community, it was customary for one of that tribe to send a messenger first, and he would come and ask for permission for his tribe to come to this area. And so, you know, that was, and so he would come and there would be an elder that would welcome him. And he knew what he was there because he was dressed in a certain way that demonstrated that he was there in peace and that he came to discuss and trade and do all those types of things in the community. And so the welcome to country was a respectful thing. It wasn't you didn't just go into somebody else's country and start conducting your business and doing your own thing. It was a sign of respect for the people that were living in that tribal area, and to seek their permission to come in. And so so that's what a welcome to country is that the traditional owners of that land would welcome the people that were visiting into their tribal boundaries. And so and the difference between a welcome to country and the acknowledgement is that anybody can acknowledge. And so, you know, Tim, you could acknowledge the Yugambeh people, you can acknowledge the Kumbumeri people here in the Gold Coast, but you're not a traditional owner. So, but you can still acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land on which we meet. So that's the difference. And acknowledgement can be done by people, and especially if they're recognised in the Gold Coast community, you can still do that acknowledgement, but you just can't do the welcome to country.
Yes.
Yeah, that's something performed by traditional owners. Yeah.
Yes.
And so without, you know, before I continue on, I want to acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land and my tribal ancestors that are from this region, and to acknowledge elders past, present and emerging. And so those things are all done out of the foundational values of our people, was to respect and to honour and, to pay tribute to people. And so it's important, you know, that part of the acknowledgement and the welcome is all about acknowledging as well. So
thank you so much. And thanks for that insight. And again, I feel like that's kind of prelude to what we're going to be doing a lot in this little time we have together, which is for me to learn and for us to share and talk. And as we were chatting, Mark, you work in the space of mental health within the community here. You're a director of your own organization called The Meeting Place. I liked, as we were chatting yesterday, kind of preparing for today, you said what we're going to do is we're going to have a meeting place.
Yeah.
And we're going to sit down and we're going to talk. Can you kind of speak into what you meant by that as we kind of delve into what might be some very difficult conversations? Are we hearing a lot? Again, in Australia, there's a lot of challenges we face that we have to work through.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely, yeah, definitely, Tim. And look, just to start proceedings off, my logo here, Meeting Place, is in the Tweed community, and in the New South Wales communities and Indigenous communities, the sacred grounds were called Bora grounds.
Yeah,
and that's where elders would meet. You know, and they would come and they would discuss issues within the community. You know, what were the pressing needs of the time. And so it was a place where everyone came And it's about this collective, you know, that we need to do what's best for the tribe and for the survival of the people. So what do we need to do as a collective? And so everyone was respected in that circle. Everyone exchanged knowledge. And that was for the survival of the tribe, and that was for the betterment of the people. And so there was such knowledge as, you know, bloodlines. There was such knowledge as food sources and trade, and, you know, all these types of things were going on within that circle, within that meeting place. And you know, for us today, for you and I today, you know, you call this a meeting place, and it, rightly so. It's an exchange of knowledge, Tim. You know, we both acknowledge each other's areas of expertise, and, you know, your charity and what the work that you do in the community, you know, is highly valued, and just as much as you value my work and what I do in the mental health space and for Indigenous people. So,
yeah,
you know, this is an exchange, and this is what I believe that. When I go into work with communities or work with people, is that, hey, this is about a place of exchange here.
Yeah.
You know, please don't look at me as if I'm the teacher and I'm up here.
Right.
You know, we're on equal ground here, and I place myself in the seat of the learner when I'm in somebody else's community. You know, because I'm not the expert in their community.
100%. And let's be honest. One of the great challenges we have here is too often, especially when it comes to dealing with some of the difficult conversations around white Australian Indigenous communities, is you help point this out. Too often, the Indigenous Aboriginal community has been placed as the young black child in the conversation, and this paternalistic.
Yeah.
You know, we're here to teach you and help you in your issues and problems, and that needs to be flipped. And so I want to acknowledge here in this conversation, this meeting place, as we talk about some of these issues, I'm the student here, and you're the elder, you're the one to teach. And I know we all have a conversation and a voice to bring to the table, but for us and for our listeners,
yeah.
You're our teacher today, so thank you for joining in that place.
But I'll just pull you up there for a moment. There,
yeah.
I don't know about the elder bit there, Tim. But
well,
I don't know if I've assumed that level yet.
We could pull out our birth certificates. At least you're my elder. So,
And there is a lot of tension in Australia at the moment. Unfortunately, look, there are things such as, you know, January the 26th. You know,
exactly.
You know, there's a lot of tension around that,
and it seems like every year it gets more and more intense.
Yeah,
for sure.
I think with anything that, and you alluded to it there just before about that paternal relationship.
Yes.
You know that, we're the small black child, and non-Indigenous Australians are the parent, and that relationship has to change. There has to be this equality of where we meet at this central place, and we have respect for one another, you know. And we've learnt from, you know, we've been learning from Europeans for since the day that colonization happened. But you know, we have just as much knowledge as well, you know, to share,
just as much more, you know, I would argue.
To share and you know, I think where we're getting to is that there are more people now being educated about the history of Australia, and they don't like what they've heard. You know, the younger generation now.
Mate, I don't even remember getting hardly any education about it growing up in school.
Yeah.
To be honest.
Yeah. That's right.
It's only as events like, you know, Australia Day, you know, January 26, discussions that we actually are learning more and more about why it is such a, you know, difficult day, difficult time.
And why is it a trigger for Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander people?
Exactly.
And I think that's where the people that are able to converse and people that are able to communicate. We need our communicators, and we need our people to come to the table. These conversations have to be had. Now, because like I said, the tension is becoming so intense now. Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, voice has to be heard. Mm-hmm. You know, and so, there's parts of our country that are not listening.
Yeah.
And so,
Don't feel like that they need to. It's somehow it's like, well, you know, I wasn't a part of it, or I'm not racist, or I'm not X, Y, Z.
Yeah, yeah.
But how are they missing the point when they kind of go along those lines?
I think not acknowledging the past history. Mm. Now, that's not to say that we're looking to crucify anyone. That's not the case. But there has to be a recognition of past issues and before the healing. And you and I talked about this yesterday, you know, in terms of forgiveness and, right. you know, but to in order to forgive, there has to be an acknowledgement of transgression, you know. So, you know, you can't have one without the other.
No.
You know, and so it goes hand in hand. And we talked about this yesterday in terms of the Myall Creek, testimony. It was actually on ABC, plug for ABC there.
Yeah, we go.
And it was just a great depiction of this acknowledgement of what had happened there. And so for those of you listeners who are unaware of Myall Creek, it was one of the biggest massacres in Indigenous history took place. But the ancestors of the colonials and the ancestors of the Aboriginal people in that community come together once a year.
Mm.
And there's an acknowledgement of
what
happened.
They do that every year, not just a once-off.
Yeah, and they acknowledge what took place there, and then our people then pour out that forgiveness and say, "We forgive you." Mm. It's just a great depiction of reconciliation and what a powerful statement it is. And so I think that's in the heart of people. That's what you know. It's not just a case of. There's been comments in the past where, oh, just get over it. It's like, whoa, wait a second. you're talking to people that have been traumatised.
Exactly.
And, traumatised by a stolen generation, yes. You know, by children removed, you know, by, terrible atrocities in the past. And so...
And not too distant past, really.
And not too distant past. If we're honest, yeah. We're all just over 200 years old?
Mm.
As a nation since colonisation, mm-hmm. So yes, it's not all that long ago.
And White Australia policy was around in the 70s.
And this is and look, Tim. At the end of the day, this is not about digging up all the past but it there has to be some recognition. There has to be some, like I said, a recognition of that that's happened, but then to be able to then forgive,
yeah. You know, even as you kind of talk about this need of acknowledging, we must learn. We must put ourselves in the shoes of others who have experienced pain or who express the trauma and the trigger of maybe what a day. Like January 26 feels.
Mm.
The minute we're able to put ourselves and listen and understand, that is the first step. And hence why, again, it's so important to have your voice in this podcast and in other conversations.
Well, Tim, if we look at mental health and we look at it in the aspect of mental health, and we look at trauma and what trauma does and how it impacts down through the generations. You know we acknowledge that now. It doesn't just take days and weeks to recover from that. It can take years in the process of healing.
Yes.
And so you know those steps, and without the necessary resources and treatments and knowledge, that process can take a lot longer.
I've had actually one of the first episodes I had on here was with Elaine Pearson. She's the director of Human Rights Watch in Australia, and it was around the time of George Floyd's death in custody, and there was other Indigenous deaths in custody. And again, these are these issues, Indigenous deaths in custody, as well as the racism that we still see within our culture. I mean, the Collingwood Football Club, for example, has had, you know, exposure of racism that's systemic within a culture of a sporting club. When these things come out, we've got to ask ourselves why, and not only, you know, within, you know, specific issues like that, but in general, as we look at the conditions and the living standards of Indigenous Australians across Australia, the mortality rates and the access to basic healthcare. Until we learn and understand and really kind of what is actually happening, we're not going to have the compassion or the understanding to be like, hey, maybe there is some systemic issues. Maybe there's some things that we need to sit down and at the table and have a look at. Why is it the case? What is still the root cause to why this is still so prevalent in a well developed country like Australia?
Yeah, for sure. Look, the Honourable Mick Dodson, he made a comment the other day which I really liked. He said, look, reconciliation is not a divorce, it's actually a joining together. And I just went, yeah, exactly right. You know, but it seems as though that the wider community are seeing this as a divorce. And it's not, and it's not that. It's actually a coming together. So, and which to his point was exactly what he was talking about. This is not a separation here. This is actually a coming together, and bringing two races, two people together.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, definitely.
And the fact that there's such a hand of welcome of offer of forgiveness, you know, at the hands of those in the community, of the Indigenous community, should be more than enough for us to be willing to come and know that you're right. This isn't, we're not going to be dragged over the coals just to acknowledge. Yeah.
No, that's right.
My privilege and my status in society as a result of some pretty, you know, horrific things in the past.
Yeah, look, at the end of the day, we don't want to harp on the atrocity, but we want to, because we've got to move forward. But there also has to be acknowledgement. You know, we're not recognised, and you know, for a big part of history, at one stage we weren't even recognised as flora or fauna. You know, so that's you know, to have some form of recognition, and hence the reason for the tension on January 26th. Mm-hmm. That's a recognition of white Australia, but it's not a recognition of Indigenous Australia. And so if we're going to move forward together, which is what reconciliation is, there has to be a day that we all agree upon for the traditional custodians and to non-Indigenous Australia. That is a true reconciliation. You know, at the moment, it's a one-sided affair. We're not recognised in the Constitution.
Yeah.
You know, so there is nothing within the Constitution that recognises Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people. And so that in itself, if we want change, it has to be driven from the top. It has to be driven from the powers that be. Whenever there are attitudes within the leadership, you can almost say that those attitudes are going to stem to the rest of the body.
Leaders set the tone, don't they?
Leaders set the tone.
And that's just the responsibility when you're put in that position. Power, authority, and you speak on behalf of a country, on behalf of...
Yeah. Look, Nelson Mandela is one of the greatest and will be one of the greatest examples of, you know, such difficulty, but yet... to come out and forgive and lead a nation to the way he did,
right,
is just an absolute example of you know, an absolutely heroic story.
Yeah, so true. After all that he experienced personally, his imprisonment, and then to be able to come out, and lead the way he did, and unite a country the way he did for all people to look to him.
Look, if there was anyone that once he assumed power, could have wielded that power,
right,
in a wrong way, but chose not to.
Yeah,
that shows the power of the man. That shows the absolute, the authority that man held. You know, that he was not going to allow that bitterness and that anger and that resentment. To blur his judgment, and the way that he led,
or to refuel a retaliation,
exactly. So he's, in my eyes, he's one of the great leaders of the modern era.
Yeah. You know? Let me tell you about one of our partners, Freedom Broadband. They're an incredible profit for purpose business. Freedom Broadband is your all-in-one internet and telephone service provider, whether it's for your business or your home. Now, their internet connection and speeds are simply amazing, and they're in another league when it comes to the quality of their customer service. But here's what really sets them apart. When you switch to any of their services, they'll donate $5 every month to a nonprofit cause of your choice. As the founder of You Belong, an Australian-based nonprofit charity, one of the greatest challenges we face is fundraising. And I think I can speak for almost all leaders in the nonprofit world when I say that being able to have a residual income coming into your accounts to support your work is a dream come true. And like most nonprofits, our work is dependent on the generous support of individuals and groups that share our passion to empower refugees to integrate and thrive here in Australia. What that means is that we spend more time and energy looking for ways to raise support. And what I desperately love to be doing is spending that time and our limited resources developing and growing the many successful programs that we run. But here's where our friends at Freedom Broadband come in. You see, a few months back, I was on a 4G wireless connection at home through one of the largest phone and internet companies here in Australia. And each month I was nervous about going over our usage, getting a nasty bill at the end, and I was working on a lot of the podcasting and videos at home, and the speeds I was getting were just painfully debilitating. And I finally decided to give Freedom Broadband a call, and within 2 minutes I was on the call with Graham completing my application. And within a week I had completely switched over to their $79 a month unlimited plan, and I can tell you firsthand, the service has been phenomenal, and I have a direct line to their customer service team whenever I have a question or need assistance. Now the studio and office where I work has switched over to Freedom Broadband as well. We're on their business plan and we haven't looked back. And how cool is this? Little by little, connection by connection, Aussie-owned and locally run Freedom Broadband is now actively supporting the great work of nonprofits in communities all around Australia. Simply by switching your internet to Freedom Broadband, you can help transform the lives of those less fortunate. And that's why I love these guys. Get this, head to freedombroadband.com.au and quote Justice Matters on your application form, and they will donate $50 from the activation fee to support Justice Matters. That's going to enable us to continue this podcast and inspire the world where everyone belongs. That's freedombroadband.com.au. Say goodbye to expensive, mediocre internet with poor customer service, and hello to top-notch internet service and the good feeling of knowing you're supporting a great cause. Join Freedom Broadband today. Quote Justice Mattis, and let's partner together with the internet that's helping to change the world. So true.
Yeah.
And you kind of mentioned about, I mean, Australia not acknowledging Indigenous and Torres Strait Islander people in the Constitution. That's mind-boggling. And we were talking a bit about this idea of there being a treaty, or you know, this is something that New Zealand has done a long time ago, you know, and has, and you can see within their cultures such a unified force amongst Indigenous
Kiwis,
Kiwis.
The Māoris, and you know, like I said, they have a treaty with their government.
Yeah.
So you know, that's that for us. I actually read through the constitution yesterday.
You did.
And the only thing that was to do with anything that even remotely may have thought about another was to mention another race. And it was around laws that the government could initiate in the event of dealing with other races.
Oh my gosh.
You know, and look, that there, it says it there.
Yeah.
So
we have a long ways to go, and it starts by learning, it starts by sitting down, it starts by becoming aware.
Yeah.
And having honest reflection.
Yeah.
But more than just reflection, right? Reflection is stage one. The aim, like you said, is reconciliation. The aim is healing.
Yeah.
One, acknowledge.
Yeah.
Step two, you know, I would argue we've got to change the system. There's got to be equality. We've got to amend laws. We've got to take concrete steps to address quite often systemic problems.
The inequality.
And the inequality, right? Then and only then can we truly, you know, hope for and experience that healing and oneness and reconciliation that we all long for.
Yeah. Like Mick Dodson said, this is a partnership.
Mm.
This is not a divorce.
Mm-hmm.
Reconciliation is a coming together. You know, so it's a I think he described it like a marriage.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, which is quite you know, it's quite interesting terminology and the way to describe it, but it, you know, it talks on a whole lot of levels, doesn't it? So
one of the things has made me quite often proud to be Australian, whether I've lived abroad and even now as you know, on the work I get to do, is, you know, we are a place that has historically welcomed, you know, people to their shores from all countries, you know, and we are a multicultural country and nation, right?
Yep.
And we can draw on that tradition of welcome to country, of welcome if you are here for peace and to share your knowledge and to walk alongside as brothers and to encourage each other.
Yes.
This is a place that is providing refuge for people that have fled wars, and the work I get to do is providing a safe haven for refugees, for displaced people. And we certainly could be doing a lot better job at that too, and that's kind of a discussion for another time.
Yep.
But that being said, that's the beauty of what we, the image of what we can live to as Australian people.
Yeah.
And I say that because we need people like yourselves and those leaders within the Indigenous community drawing us on and leading us on to that place of a unified Australia.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, definitely. That unity is so important. And, you know, if we're talking about, you know, if we're talking about our mates and, you know, that we're good mates and well, mates look out for each other, you know. Mates respect each other, you know. Mates go the extra mile with one another, you know. So, you know, if we're gonna talk about those, we don't want them just as slogans,
right? Know? Exactly. We like to kind of throw that out. And everyone gets a fair go here in Australia. Well, is there a fair go here in Australia?
Yeah. Are we genuine?
Yeah. Are our policies?
Yeah.
Giving everybody equal opportunity, right?
Yeah. And I think the recognition of the First Nations people, I think that should be high on the agenda. Mm. And you know, I think just the recognition and having been part of that constitution would be, you know, part of the step, and, you know, having a day that we all celebrate.
Yeah.
You know, yes, we want to celebrate too, but we don't want it to be a day that, that causes pain or angst for our people. You know, we want it to be seen as a day to celebrate. Everybody celebrates.
Mm.
Yep.
Yeah, that's so beautiful. We had the, I think this past Australia Day gone past, the day before we were with our team up in Toowoomba, and we got to actually kind of really reflect as a team, join in with a group called Common Grace. I think they put on a service, and really kind of, it was a somber time to really kind of acknowledge and wade into this issue and learn. And boy, for us as a organisation with You Belong Australia, it humbled us. It really made us kind of sit and think, oh my gosh, you know, here I am. And it created a difficult tension for that day, and that's okay.
Yeah.
You know, and I think in these moments we like to kind of get the pitchforks out and go after each other. And it's okay that there's this awkward tension. It's okay that there's this, hang on, I want to celebrate, but hang on, I know that this is an awful day for many people to even consider to celebrate. And I think, you know, not to belabor too much, again, I'd love to talk more a bit about some of the work you do, but I think as we have these conversations, I would say it's okay for there to be the awkwardness. It's okay for there to be the tension. It's okay for us to be able to sit down and just kind of bounce back and forth and just have the curiosity, the humility to just be a learner. And boy, I feel like I'm getting an education more and more, an education I wish I had when I was younger, an education I wish I had known truly.
Yeah.
But I'm thankful for where we're going, and that these issues and conversations are happening more and more often.
Look, the universities now, our good friend Dr. Ruth Knight. Dr. Ruth is having great conversations. I'm actually going to sit down with her and talk about reconciliation.
Amazing.
And so, you know, there are the next generation now that are coming through.
Mm.
Who are learning more about this injustice. They're learning more about the First Nations people and what has happened here now. And I think that's the more the next generations learn about the past and the history, their eyes are opening, go, oh, wow, no, that's not right, you know.
And not just learning it from a textbook, you know, white Aussie authors, but learning it at the feet of Indigenous Australians themselves.
Yes, yeah, definitely. And you know, I think that's been a positive step towards the future. And you know, that our people have been able to tell their story, and some of the stories are being recognised and heard.
Mm.
And you know, I've had the opportunities to go into universities myself and schools and be able to teach these young kids. You know, a lot of them now are so interested in the didgeridoo. You know, wow, you know, they hear of this iconic, instrument, native instrument from Australia. Mm. And they want to know more, you know. They want to know more about the artwork, and so I do a little bit of work in some schools, and the kids are they love it.
I love there's an innocence to children, right? There's a curiosity it's so often, you know, before the stereotypes and the hardened ideologies that sometimes get passed down and we get set into as we grow older. That's the beauty of capturing the young hearts.
Oh, look, they're so impressionable, you know, and they love, you know, those things are, you know, like the didgeridoo, and, you know, being able to rub two sticks together and make fire, you know, that intrigues young people, you know. So, and I think the most intriguing part is how our people have survived. You know, their stories have been able to, you know, we've seen so many TV programs now about survival in the bush, you know, and they send celebrities out into the bush and they want to see how they survive. And I think when they think, then they start to think about Aboriginal people and how they survived, that they lived like that all the time.
Yes.
Not just, yeah, not just in a TV show, but that's the way our ancestors lived. And they were able to survive for forever and a day, and were able to live on this land. You know, to be able to follow food sources, to be able to look after their children, and you know, and survive for such a long period of time in Australia without you know, modern, all this modern stuff. I think that just, I think that captivates kids because they want to know, well, how did they do that?
Yeah,
how did they live on the land? How did they survive for so long? You know, and live like that.
You know, there's so much to learn from. Hey, the one of the oldest cultures on the planet, right?
That's it.
And to learn from the expertise that they have in building community. And I would say, okay, if we're talking about maybe a crisis that the world is facing right now, mental health, right? Yep. Our ability to kind of cope through challenges and crises and that rising rates of anxiety and depression and suicide and so many other then physical and other conditions that arise out of out of mental health challenges. We have a people who have so much to teach us about community, about survival, about working together. And yet, you know, I'd love for you to kind of maybe lean into that space here as I would say a real critical point for us to kind of discuss here, this whole crisis that we're facing, mental health. And and what is there that we can learn even from amongst, you know, the Indigenous community around that as well?
Yeah, look, one of the things that we, in the training, so, and a little plug here for Mental Health First Aid Australia. They have worked with one of the elders from the Central Desert, and she talks about a process of deep thinking, which she calls Didiri. Now, Didiri is about that being still, about, you know, being mindful of your thoughts and the way that you think. And so, and taking that time to be peaceful, taking that time to sit and ponder and think, and it's deep thinking. And so meditation, you know, so these things are not foreign to our people. These practices have been part of our people for many years. And so she is bringing back this art of meditation, this art of deep thinking for our people, because of what now the fast paced life,
right?
You know, we're now affected by, you know, you know, as funny as it is, you know, even in a remote community, kids still have mobile phones. You know, they still have access to smartphones and things like that. So, you know, there's still access to all this information,
right?
And so, you know, she has found it very important to get back there and start teaching, and not just only Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, but teaching people in general about this meditation, this deep thinking, and getting back to that taking time,
that practice.
Yeah,
what a tool. Like you said, you know, the adverse effects of Western
technology
and technological advances,
you
know, and yet the solution is found deep within, you know, the beginnings of culture and time, you know,
is
practice.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's those practices that, you know, we're seeing more and more people now with anxiety. We're seeing more and more people now with depression, you know, and so, you know, how do we, and the other thing is the recognition of that. You know, a lot of people don't even recognize that they have anxiety, or they don't understand, or they don't even know that they've got depression.
They kind of know it, but there's a stigma around maybe even just acknowledging it and saying, hey, I need help.
That's the next level. That's the next level. But there are people out there that don't even know. They're not aware. And they shun these symptoms as...
They think, oh, I can't sleep, but they don't know that the reason why they can't sleep.
Exactly. Exactly. And then all of a sudden they might have a conversation with somebody that has a little bit of mental health knowledge, or they come to one of our trainings. And it's quite interesting, Tim, when I first begin to train, and there's a lot of skeptics in the room, and a lot of folded arms and defensive looks. But then when you start to talk about some of these mental health issues, you start to talk about some of the symptomatic things, you begin to see the defences come down, and they're disarmed, and because then they start self-reflecting and go, wow, that's happening to me. And so it's quite interesting to see after a session a person come up to me and say, hey, Mark, I've had some of those things happen for me. You know, it's like, it's wow, you know. And then they're just like... They're just so open then to the learning, and like you said, you know, the stigma attached with mental health, you know, that's a big one, you know. So that's why there's the people come in defensive, or they come guarded, because they're worried about the stigma of it, but then when they recognise that, you know, we're there to break down those stigmas, but also to debunk some of the myth around it, but to also give people hope for recovery. That's a big one, you know. So that in itself, mental health is also another thing that needs to be destigmatized here in Australia. So
yeah, and you were saying earlier that, you know, we obviously have you know, certain professions, you have to have an updated first aid.
Yes,
kind of. How would you respond in the case of an emergency and provide CPR first aid?
Yeah,
you're saying that we're because of this, the rising need to address mental health in our culture, in our country.
Yes,
this is something that we would probably need to be seeing on a widespread, consistent.
And look, Tim, that's only my own personal opinion.
Yeah,
but I believe that the mental health issues, you know, this year we're coming out, the new ABS stats will be coming out this year. So I'll be very interested to see, you know, the statistics around mental health and whether there's been an improvement or whether there's been a decrease or, you know, incline in numbers around mental health. So that'll be interesting. I'm waiting with bated breath, and I'm gathering that those statistics probably won't come out till next year.
Yeah.
However, it'll be very interesting to see how that pans out.
So we talked a bit about... kind of technology and the busyness of life and the fast, you know, the different challenges. What are the other kind of root causes for mental health, would you say, are, you know?
I think trauma's probably our biggest one, Tim.
Trauma.
Yeah, trauma. And so if we look across the demographic of people within our nation, now it's a little bit crazy to think about it in terms of, you know, when we talked about earlier that, you know, Australia is such a beautiful country.
Yeah.
You know, we have everything, but yet we still have all these elements, you know, of trauma, you know, from the past. And so for the biggest one for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, that trauma is big in terms of stolen generation, children being removed and all those types of things.
Yeah.
You know, dispossession of land. And that loss of identity.
Yeah.
You know, and for years, you know, if you reflect upon some of our elders that came through those years, the loss of their identity, you know, told not to speak their language.
Yeah.
You know, in the Bundjalung community. Now,
wow.
Thankfully, we've got some young brothers down there, Kyle Slab and Josh Slab. Who still speak the language fluently, Bundjalung language. They were taught by Uncle Eric Walker from over at Kyogle before he passed. So thankfully we've still got Kyle and the boys. They know the language fluently. And so they're bringing back our Bundjalung language. In some of the other nations, you know, there's very limited people that speak their language, that speak the the language of their clan. And so, you know, all those things, lack of identity, you know, not knowing, having to take on somebody else's identities, take on somebody else's last name, you know, all those things, you know, count towards, well, who am I?
You know, wow.
Who am I? You know, I'm this person that's, you know, supposed to be, am I supposed to be a white Australian? And, right. You know, when we look back at some of the old documentation where an Aboriginal person could apply and write, fill out a form to say that they were no longer Aboriginal.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So, you know, it's this type of stuff that people don't recognise. Oh, you know, it's like if you told somebody that today and, look, you can apply, you're not going to be this person, you're going to be this person here.
And I think, you know, this connection with the land, this yep. connection with my people, my language, I mean, this is something too that I think we as white people, and I speak for myself, are missing out on tremendously, this connection to country, this connection to the soil and the ground, this understanding of how, you know, it all interrelates.
Yeah.
You know, I remember just recently the destruction at the hands of a mining company of sacred grounds of Aboriginal people and the devastation. And some people, you know, there's this mentality of, well, the land is just for our profit and it's there to serve us. And we have this quite often, too often, a twist. We have it back to front, you know, that... we are the custodians. The land doesn't belong to us. So speak to some of that.
Well, it's like going over to Egypt and going, hey, let's blow up the pyramids. You know, thousands of years of his historical things right there. That's what basically took place.
That's what happened.
Yeah,
in Western Australia.
Yeah. So you know it. There's things that just can't be replaced. You know, that history, that all those caves and that were destroyed, and the artworks that are thousands of years old that tell stories of that land and that nation. You know,
their identity,
exactly. You know, and how that happened. I, to this day, I'll never know. It's just totally.
I mean,
it just boggles. As you can see, I'm stuck for words.
Right.
But yeah. Look, there is so much history in Australia, which is, you know, for local history. You know, I sometimes I'll get asked, "Oh, Mark, how do I know if there's any Indigenous sites in my homeland?" Well, go and find. Go and look. Mm. You know, you're not looking hard enough. If you ask some of the elders around your communities, they'll tell you.
Yeah.
They'll point it out to you. If you take the time and go and have a look and talk to an elder, they'll point it out to you.
Yeah.
They'll tell you the stories. They'll tell you the history. You know, just take the time. Go and sit down and talk with them. And, you know, look, there's a lot of historical sites here in the Gold Coast.
Mm.
And I bet you you didn't know that there was a Bora ground just over here at Miami. No, you didn't. There you go.
Awesome.
So there's a Bora ground that's right next to the McDonald's.
What?
And it looks like a park.
Wow.
But that's an actual sacred Aboriginal site.
Meeting ground.
That's a meeting ground. Yeah. And there's a little RSL hall right beside it, and it looks like a round fence. And if you didn't know, you'd think it was just a park.
Wow.
But it's actually a sacred site.
Meeting place.
It's a meeting place. It's a Bora ground. Yeah. You know, and there's a lot of historical history around the Burleigh Headland.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's got a lot of signage there that, you know, that will tell the stories and the Dreamtime stories of that area. But it's all here. You know, there's so much historical. Gold Coast has such a rich history of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander sites and wealth of knowledge here. So
we have so much to learn. And this is the thing, like, it's like we are missing out by not diving in, and this is where I wanted to go, even with some of the mental health. Sometimes we think we can bring out expertise in mental health that we know psychoanalysis and we know this and this, but what already exists in your culture, in your community?
Yeah.
The fact that you know, there's this sense of community.
Yeah.
We live in such an individualized kind of culture and everything is kind of tearing us apart. And unfortunately, yeah, COVID kind of exacerbates in some yeah, ways the isolation from one another.
Yeah.
But this sense of, well, sometimes the healing and the help that we find comes in coming together and building community. Again, these are things that are kind of like just built into.
They're innate for Aboriginal people.
Exactly,
you know, like
they're innate.
In terms of the, you know, the kinship structure. Mm. So if you look at families, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander families.
Yeah.
So the original structure is that you had a mother and father.
Yeah.
That mother and father, if they had brothers and sisters, and this mother and father had children, all those brothers and sisters of the father and mother became mothers and fathers of that those children. So they become this unit, for want of a better word, that is there's protection. Mm. You know, if mum was having a hard time or needed support, then these other mothers would fill in. You know, they're held in esteem just as much as the biological mother. So that's, you know, that's the added support.
What strength.
Yeah, exactly. And within that structure was there was respect, there was honor, there was protection, there was nurture, you know. And it may appear that they're just going from one father to the next, but they are the fathers. You know, they are, and this is the strength of this structure of the kinship. And so, you know, that there in itself now is what we call in terms of a collective.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a collective, you know, the old adage says that it takes a village to raise a child.
Yeah.
You know, that's never changed. It's never changed.
Mm.
You know, I could walk down the road, if my uncle seen me mucking up, he's gonna give me a kick up the backside, you know. Say,
yeah,
hey, pull your head in, you know.
Right.
And that's part of, and you respected him, yeah, because he's seen as he's a father figure.
Yeah.
But that's innate. That's in Indigenous communities. You respected those elders. They're looking out for you because they're a father figure.
Yeah.
And so you don't just only have one father, you have all these other fathers that are, you know, invested in your upbringing. And so hence when you get our young people in traditional times, our young people, when they were seen as old enough to assume responsibility, well, then that's when they went through the rite of passage. So that was a time that, okay, you're old enough now. You've got to assume some responsibility, but you got to prove yourself that you're able to take responsibility in our group now. And so that's why they go off to that. And that there is then a coming of age. You know, if you compare it to Western society now. You know, the coming of age is going to the pub and getting drunk. Well, you
don't even have anything.
Yeah.
Or like you said, and it's something like that.
Yeah, that's that. And in today's youth and in some of the workshops that I work in, Tim, is that's what's seen as the coming of age is I'm 18 now.
I'm 18.
I can go to the pub. I can get served. You can't stop me now. And that's what this Western mentality is, whereas you compare that to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, is no, you've got to go through a rite of passage, you've got to prove yourself here.
Come on.
And then also you then assume responsibility. So you're not just becoming a man just so you can go wander off and do whatever you want. You're now to help pull the load here now. We've got families to look after within this clan. You got to go out hunting. You got to go out fishing now. You're part of the men now.
Mm.
We're going to support our families. You're now responsible for your bloodline and to ensure that you're not marrying the wrong skin group.
Mm.
Yeah? And so you know, all that knowledge was you attained that knowledge when you went through that rite of passage. Mm. So, you know, this is all the things that, and this is what then grows our young people.
Right.
You know, they assume that responsibility. They understand that they're not to fool around, that they got responsibilities.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Justice Matters. I'd like to take this time to thank my audio-visual engineer, Jose Biotto, for your help in producing the show. I'd also like to shout out to the Patreon community that financially supports this podcast. Guys, thank you so much for your support. You can join them simply by going to patreon.com/justicematters for a simple donation of $5 a month. You can become a part of the Patreon community and get access to behind-the-scenes content and extras that I share just with you. And lastly, there is another really important way that you can help support the podcast, and that's simply by rating it or leaving a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, maybe by subscribing on YouTube. Yes, we are a video podcast as well. Guys, thank you so much for listening in to this episode of Justice Matters. Please come again soon. I can't wait to share more episodes with you. I'm your host, Tim Buxton. Thanks for listening.